Welcome to Below the 10, a series about life in South LA. I'm David Weinberg, a reporter for KCRW in Los Angeles. Below the 10 is a documentary series about what it's like to live in one of America's most iconic places, South Central Los Angeles. It's a community with a reputation that's synonymous with the rise of West Coast hip-hop and the bloody gang war between the Crips and the Bloods that fueled the city's staggering homicide rates in the late 80s and early 90s. But since then, gang-related homicides and crime in general has dropped significantly in South Central, which the city has rebranded. It's now called South LA. Today's story is the first in a three-part miniseries called Peacemakers. You'll meet a cop who grew up in South LA and had a very different approach to police work than many of his colleagues. You'll also meet a former gang member who now works with the police, and you'll meet a mother who suddenly found herself living in the middle of a terrifying gang war happening right outside her front door. This series explains how these three people came together to make their neighborhoods safer. We begin the series with the story of Michael Carradine. Michael Carradine is a lieutenant with the Los Angeles Police Department. He's been on the force for 31 years, though he looks much younger than that. He has this way of drawing you in with his striking green eyes. Back when he was a beat cop in the late 80s and early 90s, the peak years of violent crime in Los Angeles, he worked in the Nickerson Gardens housing project in South LA. The residents there called him Green-Eyed Mike.
Working in that housing development, you're dealing with the same people day in and day out. The Bounty Hunter Bloods, you know, they were the primary gang there. And for me, I never had any aversion to talking to people in the community, period. And I really didn't care what affiliation they may have or what their lifestyle they had. I really didn't care. I just saw a person.
Carradine's style of policing was built on the idea that you treat all people, even gang members, as human beings. And this idea often confounded Carradine's fellow officers.
And I would, to a certain degree, get ostracized by fellow officers. I mean, they would just stare out, ask me, why are you talking to these individuals? They're gang members. And the lines of demarcation were very clear to them. It's like, we're the police. Those are the bad guys. And, you know, we deal with it accordingly.
For him, the world was not so clearly divided between the good guys and the bad guys. As a black kid growing up in South Central, when it was a primarily white neighborhood, Carradine was mistreated by police regularly. They would call him nigger, detain him and his friends for no reason, and they would bluntly tell him, you are not allowed west of Crenshaw. And a few times, they assaulted his friends and his brother.
You knew in our neighborhoods, you knew certain entities that you would prefer to deal with.
Carradine says a lot of people who get mistreated by the police, even if it's just a single incident, develop a lifelong mistrust of law enforcement. But that didn't happen to Carradine. Instead, he saw bad policing as a problem that could be solved.
I've always been a firm believer that if you're going to be critical about something, it does you no good to criticize unless you're going to be proactive in doing something about it.
Lieutenant Carradine has played a big role in the slow changes that have occurred within the LAPD as it's tried to correct many of its failed policies and tactics. Carradine's focus has been on the department's gang intervention program, in which officers work alongside former gang members to curb violence and rebuild the community's trust in law enforcement. A few weeks ago, I visited the LAPD's training center in Inglewood, where a group of about 30 officers were seated in a classroom. The training session, which lasted all day, was part history lesson and part introduction. Veteran officers explained how things used to be done and why those tactics failed. And the officers were introduced to several former gang members who now work with the department as interventionists. Sergeant Curtis Woodall, well over 6 feet, shaved head, well-tailored suit, stood at the front of the room, a PowerPoint presentation projected behind him. And even before he spoke, he radiated confidence and authority. Woodall also worked in South Central in the late 80s and early 90s. He was in the gang suppression unit. He started his presentation to the class by describing how he did police work back then.
You didn't ask any questions. It was more like, What's your name?
Sergeant Woodle punched his open palm loudly to demonstrate how he used to greet people on the street who he deemed suspect.
I wanted to hear that, right? What's your name? And if it wasn't the right name, you know what was coming. That's how we operated. Everybody knew that from top to bottom.
Woodle then told this story about a day when he and his partner were cruising the neighborhood in their squad car and they saw a man jogging on the sidewalk.
I just want to talk to this guy. Hey, I'm in my car.
Woodle yelled at the man from the car, but he didn't respond. So the officers pulled up beside him, got out of the car, and they roughed him up, gave him a bloody nose, and put him in handcuffs. And then Woodle discovered that the man he'd just assaulted was deaf. That's why he hadn't responded initially.
Sorry! We laugh about it now, right? But that was normal. And so what I'm saying to you guys is, we didn't correct ourselves.
Sergeant Woodle explained that this aggressive style of policing not only created animosity between the community and law enforcement, it didn't work. Violent crime continued to rise throughout this period of suppression.
It was war, and we were losing it in a lot of ways.
The point of Sergeant Woodle's story is to illustrate just how much LAPD's tactics have changed. Today, the emphasis is on community policing, or as one instructor put it, humanity policing. It's a method of police work that looks strikingly similar to the way Lieutenant Carradine has worked his entire life.
We use the term intervention now, and you can interface that term with community outreach. And I've always had done just that. And I was able to just basically continue doing what I was doing, and now it was being fully recognized and sanctioned by the department.
Intervention is a key part of the LAPD strategy to reduce violence, and it's a hard thing to explain because A, it's complicated, and B, it goes against many of the established roles that cops and criminals have traditionally had. But it's important to understand how it works. And it begins with this basic fact. Many of the people living in places most affected by violence don't trust the police. And the LAPD recognized this, so they partnered with people who have close ties to the community. In this case, these people happen to be former gang members, called interventionists. These interventionists act as first responders to violent crimes. So, for example, there's Skip Townsend, an interventionist who works primarily in the West Adams neighborhood. Whether he's peering out from a hoodie in LA's roughest neighborhoods or adjusting his reading glasses in a boardroom among the city's most powerful elites, Skip operates with ease. He used to be a member of the Rolling Twenties, a set of bloods from the West Adams neighborhood. People there, including current members of the Rolling Twenties, respect and trust Skip. When a shooting occurs in Rolling Twenties territory, Skip will get a call or an email from the LAPD. And even though crime in LA is down since the 90s, people still get shot on a regular basis in South LA.
If it does apply to me, then I am mandated by the city to respond. Whether to respond is via telephone or if it's actually to respond to the scene is determined based on what it is and as the body's been transported.
If the body of the victim is still at the crime scene, Skip will rush straight there. If the victim has been transported to a hospital, Skip might go there instead. Or he might jump on the phone and start making calls. In any of these scenarios, his mission is essentially the same: to find out why this person was shot. Was it gang-related, a dispute over a girl, a robbery? He's trying to determine if this shooting will lead to a retaliatory killing. And if so, how can he stop it? He also acts as a buffer between the police and the community, so that if anyone does have information about the crime, they might be more willing to tell the police.
For example, I pulled up to a scene. It was early morning. One of my community members was shot, and I'm standing out there, and I'm working the crowd, and I'm talking, and the yellow tape is up, and I look down, and I see my phone ringing, and it was Mike Carradine.
Mike Carradine is Green-Eyed Mike, the lieutenant you heard earlier.
And I answered the phone. I said, hey, how's it going, Lieutenant? He said, Skip, I just want to give you a head nod from across the street. And I saw him. He said, yeah, at some point I'll come talk to you. And when he did come out and speak, you know, and give me the information he had, I had other community members there as well to let them know, you know what, it's okay to talk and listen to the police.
For interventionists to do this kind of work, they have to have what's called a license to operate. And the way a license to operate works is each interventionist has their own jurisdiction, a neighborhood where they have close ties to the community and where they have a reputation for being trustworthy, for not being a snitch.
The license to operate is based on the fact that the community understands the work and understands that no matter what happens, that us as interventionists, we will never try to get a conviction or try to get anyone arrested for something they've done. But also we get a license to operate from law enforcement based on the same things, based on the fact that they trust that any information they give us is being used to stop retaliation.
In other words, interventionists are neutral parties. They're not cops. They're not gang members. And this is a dangerous high wire act. If someone in the community thinks Skip gave up information on someone, it puts his life in danger. Conversely, if the police think Skip might be protecting someone or obstructing justice, this puts his freedom in jeopardy. This is why Lieutenant Carradine plays such a key role in intervention work. He's developed a relationship with Skip to the point where he, as a cop, can vouch for him to other officers in the department who might be skeptical about working with an ex-offender. It's a relationship that's built on the shared experience of growing up in South Central.
We have that common bond right there. You know, we have a common understanding of where we came from and what we were trying to achieve. And I think the key was we both were trying to achieve the same things. It's all about we wanted to see peace in the neighborhoods that we had a connection with and still had a connection with.
By the time that Skip and Carradine met in 2008, Skip had long quit gang life. He had a successful business as a tow truck driver, and he was mentoring youth and volunteering with several anti-violence groups in the community.
Oh, I met Skip, it was 2008. That was the year that the department really started to seriously look and embrace what intervention was. When we first started this, we saw record drops in homicides and gang-related crime overall. Can we say that intervention was the cause? Well, there are a lot of factors that are involved, obviously, with drops in crime, but I have to say that intervention played a role in the overall approach of how to address those crimes.
Carradine still deals with a lot of skepticism that officers have about working with people who once stood on the opposite side of the line of demarcation from the police. He, along with Skip and the other interventionists, are trying to correct the us versus them mentality that has failed the community in the past. Sergeant Woodall put it this way in his closing remarks to the officers in training. "Know this," he said, "it's important for you guys to win. It's also important for their community to win. If they don't win, we don't win either." I'm David Weinberg for KCRW. This project is supported by a grant from the Conrad N. Hilton Foundation. You can find more about the series at belowthe10.com. That's T-E-N. There, you'll find tons of fantastic visual elements. There's videos and photos of some of the people in the series. There's interactive maps and beautiful illustrations. The series was reported and produced by me, David Weinberg, with Alexandra Garriton. It was edited by Sonia Geis and Nick White. And the digital team was run by Caitlin Schamberg. Thanks for listening.